KRFP, Moscow Pullman.
Latin Explosion will return in this time slot November 9th. For now, we're bringing you election-related programming in the 8 to 10 p.m. slot on Sunday nights. On tonight's show, we'll bring you our interviews with 6 out of 8 Moscow City Council candidates, plus interviews with both the candidates for mayor. The 8 City Council candidates are Evan Holmes, Steve Bonner, Sage Miketich, Scott Sumner, John Slagboom, Gina Taruccio, Gary Schooland, and Ben Stellman. Gary Schooland and Ben Stellman did not participate in this initial round of interviews, but Stellman says he plans to participate in a live call-in candidates forum on the radio with 2 other candidates tomorrow night at 6:30 p.m. right here on KRFP. Voters can cast ballots for up to 3 of the 8 candidates, and the top 3 vote-getters will join Bryce Blankenship, Drew Davis, and Sandra Kelly on the council. Blankenship, Davis, and Kelly have 2 years remaining in their terms. The 2 candidates for mayor are Haley Lewis and Alex Simon. We'll play the interviews with Haley Lewis and Alex Simon after we play the city council candidate interviews, or about 9:15 p.m. or so. In order to fit into this 8 to 10 p.m. time slot, these interviews are the morning mix edits. To hear the full interviews with these candidates, go to the evening report section of the KRFP.org website. The interviews for city council candidates come in the order they were recorded between October 6th and October 20th. Our first interview is with city council candidate Evan Holmes.
Well, on the surface, it's always workforce housing. Affordable housing has a subset that I really hone in on, and that is workforce housing. We have changing demographics here that have changed our housing needs, and so we're going to have to change our plans and our strategic initiatives and do little tasks that can help address this issue that's just going to get bigger. And then the second thing, of course, always in the back of my mind and everyone's, is a sustainable, predictable water supply.
Okay, and what do you mean by changing demographics? How has the demographics of Moscow been changing?
Well, Idaho's demographics are changing in general compared to the rest of the nation in that we're becoming younger. We're having more population in the age 15 to 35. That's one thing. We're also becoming more affluent. We're discovering that the high cost of living here in terms of taxes, fees, housing, utilities has not deterred people from moving here. And so when we become a more affluent society, instead of being 50% of our population being low to moderate income, if that changes and we become less than 50% low to moderate income, we lose our eligibility to apply for a lot of grants, low interest loans, federal subsidies and state subsidies on construction projects. So that changing demographic has got my antenna up.
Yeah, there was a recent issue, I believe it was before the city council, because the city of Moscow had 50.9% of the people were low to moderate income, and if it reached 51%, the city would continue to be eligible for various grants that the state distributes. Maybe you can elaborate a little on that.
Yeah, that's what I was talking about. It's an indicator, and you can get the block grants that help you help developers create housing and put in infrastructure so that the taxpayer isn't burdened with all the cost of putting in new sewer lines and stormwater collection and things like that. If we become affluent, we're no longer eligible for those matching funds. We'll be paying more for the development we need for residential housing. We'll be paying more for it. Now, we also need a influx of businesses and industrial operations that will bear a burden, a bigger burden of the tax base. Right now, we are paying about 70% of our property tax with residential property owners paying it, and only about 30% coming from commercial industrial. You really want a balance of about 50-50 so that that the employers, the people who are providing jobs and all that, can continue to support the operations that allow them to run their businesses.
And part of that would be because the University of Idaho is exempt from property taxes, as well as properties owned by religious organizations. Is that correct?
Right. I would like to do more study of the exact amount of rental property versus homeowner occupied property versus tax exempt property to see if the balance there is also skewed because of that. We don't collect a lot of statistics and have a lot of exact knowledge of that, but what you say is probably a bit of a concern.
Now, I know the Fair and Affordable Housing Commission recommended that the city create a housing authority for the city, and I wonder what your thoughts are about that. One of the first things they would probably do if they had raised a little money would be a housing needs assessment. So tell me what your thoughts are about the idea of a housing authority.
Well, I think we need to have housing authority. We need to have perhaps more or bigger presence of housing trusts. We need to actually just throw everything at the wall and see what sticks, because we're in a hole. It's been getting bigger, and as I like to think, we're still digging the hole, and we want to stop digging at least. So some of those things might work. Some might not. Housing cooperatives could work, where a group of individuals get together and 10 or 15 decide we together have the ability to build some tiny homes or some small homes and buy property and become our own developers. And so if we can remove some of the hurdles or some of the unknowns from that process, it's another way to start the ball rolling in the right direction.
I want to ask about the Hurst & Son situation. You know, what do you think should be done to help the residents of the six trailer courts in the area purchased by investment firms? There might have been a couple more since I wrote this. Most of them are outside the city, but if you can't afford to stay at your trailer home, there might be a need for, you know, several hundred people to move into the city and put pressure on the rental market.
Right, and that's where the housing authority would come in. With the housing authority and cooperatives, like I mentioned earlier, you could help those people band together to bootstrap themselves into owning tiny homes or manufactured homes, or perhaps even building homes from scratch, and be qualify for grants or low interest loans, and then perhaps do planned unit development. So they don't know the strategies that are available for them, and that's one of the things that the city council could help do, is bring all these possibilities to the forefront and let people know how they could fit into the possibilities. We have another challenge that's just come up, and that is what you talked about, is county land is where our development has to go for the most part. The state of Idaho has determined that in the area of impact, the city no longer has any say in zoning or what goes there. The county has pretty much 100% say, and the city is merely advisory. So that means we have to rewrite parts of our comprehensive plan, because we no longer can describe the zoning or the development directions or what we want to have happen to those lands.
What are your thoughts about the future of the city budget? I know other cities are showing revenue shortfalls and preparing for the possibility of less federal assistance. I believe those community block grants, even though they're administered by the state, involve federal money. So what are you thinking about the future of the city's budget?
Well, we're going to have to be lean and mean. There's going to be a greater sense of urgency to prioritize. We're going to have to really look at money that goes into the capital improvement fund, and maybe some of that will have to actually reverse course and go, although some of it's there with strings tied to it because it came from grants or loans or things that, you know, describe what it's going to be used for. But we are going, yes, you're exactly right. We're going to have to spend more time on the budget than we have in the past and be certainly prioritize our spending. And the city council's 80% of the job is administrative, and that's making sure that we have water, sewer, streets, stormwater retention, safety services, emergency medical, and all that. And really, we're going to have to figure out how we can do that best. I'm disappointed to see that in the county, which we pay a third of our taxes here in Moscow, we pay to the county, a third to the school district, and a third to the city of Moscow, that there's going to be some expensive needs in the county, too. So it all points to a bigger burden on the taxpayer, which is, unfortunately, those taxes are borne, as I said before, 70% by residential properties and only 30% by commercial and industrial. So the long-term solution is to invite more commercial industrial development and have that tax base balance better. And then the other thing is to really lobby the state legislature to increase the homeowner exemption on owner-occupied dwellings.
That was our interview with Moscow City Council candidate Evan Holmes. Next up, our interview with Council candidate Sage Makedich.
Housing is a need, right? And that's kind of where I always start this conversation. And, you know, part of that need is having a variety of housing supply available to folks for their various at-home needs. And so I personally would love to see, you know, growth in a direction that is more sort of accessible, more affordable, smaller scale. Can't tell you how many times I've had buyers, you know, in that 200 to 350 range that just can't find something affordable and accessible to them. And if or when they do, there's, you know, five others chomping at the bit to get it. And so it's really a challenging situation to be in. I mean, demand in Moscow in the time I've been an agent, you know, since 2016 has just been pretty high. And even in these slower times, you know, market times are still generally in the 45 to 60 days on market. We are starting to see some recent, you know, price reductions and buyers who were able to get closing cost credits and a percentage off of the asking price. That certainly wasn't the case 5 years ago. So, you know, there's been some recent slower activity, but Moscow as a whole is a pretty stable place. And I think that's why a lot of people, you know, love growing up here, decide to raise families here, and participate in the community. It's just a really great place to be.
Now, you're listed as a member of the Moscow Fair and Affordable Housing Commission. Mm-hmm. They recently recommended that the city council start a housing authority. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on a housing authority? You know, how quickly can that get going, and what impact can it have soon?
Yeah, great question. So that's been kind of the foremost topic of the Fair and Affordable Housing Commission since the start of the year. And the thing that excites me most about the housing authority is that as a quasi-governmental entity, it is eligible for grant opportunities for affordable housing projects that aren't necessarily directly available to the city of Moscow. So to me, even as a funding and grant entity, it's a very exciting prospect. I certainly can't speak to the time frame nor the scale that this will kick off. I think that's going to depend largely on the transformation of who's involved, how much time and effort is dedicated to grant writing, and frankly, how much cooperation there is with the city of Moscow. Again, I want to be clear here. The housing authority, per Idaho code, has to be authorized by a municipality, but it does not fall under the umbrella of the city of Moscow per se. So it kind of operates quasi-governmentally alongside, following approval. Housing authorities can, buy, rent out, sell, develop pieces of property and acquire property. The thing that excites me most about this is the way in which the housing authority could perhaps partner with the Hills and Rivers Housing Trust, perhaps Habitat for Humanity, developers looking through sort of conventional routes for more affordable development, whether that be lower income rental opportunities or lower income housing for sale.
What do you think should be done to help the residents of these six trailer courts in the area that an investment firm purchased? Most are outside the city, but, if they can't afford to stay, then they'll be impacting the rental market here in town. So I guess maybe this is a general question about the rental market and the pressures low-income people are under.
Yeah. So that's been a huge concern of mine for years now. We've seen mobile home parks get purchased by a particular entity, and then the lot rents within those parks escalate pretty steeply.
And they impose rules, and they also cut down their shade trees as sort of a retribution for organizing, I believe.
I honestly don't know, quite enough about what they've been doing. The central topic that's come before residents of these parks, coming before the Fair and Affordable Housing Commission, has primarily been focused on lot rents. And some challenges as well, regarding maintenance and requirements either within or outside of those lease agreements. But I think a lot of the emphasis on why we need a housing authority and a lot of the initial conversations surrounding it have been about how we can provide more protection for those who really need safe, accessible, affordable, stable, secure housing. I mean, however many adjectives we can use, it is seemingly increasingly paramount to pin down this fair and affordable housing issue.
I imagine one of Idaho's dozens or so local preemption laws is one that prohibits rent control. I'm not sure about that, but I did want to ask about a more general question about local preemption laws, and maybe you can tick off a half dozen or a dozen that you don't agree with, but let's see. There's a couple I've written down: banning vax requirements for entry into venues or for employment, banning mask requirements for local governments or health districts, limiting local taxing authority. The list goes on and on. And maybe you could speak about that, and what city council people can do to lobby the legislature to get a better regulatory environment.
Yeah, I mean, I've always approached the importance of government this way. I think whether local, state, or national, the foremost priority should always be the safety of the constituency, right? The health of the constituency, and the providing of essential services such as public health care, transportation facilities, safe roadways, safe sidewalks, clean, healthy drinking water, kind of all the basics. The fire and EMS services obviously are very essential. In terms of some of these restrictions, I am one who respects and understands a private company's ability to set their own policies. I think that that element of how folks wish to run their businesses is I guess admirable, certainly not always agreeable, but admirable. And I think, you know, our current legal structure, you know, should continue to enable that to some extent.
Do you have any thoughts about the way the city handled the pandemic, having a mask ordinance during the pandemic and so forth? It was quite controversial, and there's no guarantee that a pandemic may not come up again.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I think City Council acted with the best information that was available at the time and provided by public health officials. And to be honest, I think it was the right call to have a mask mandate, to require social distancing. You know, I think that was prior to having vaccines available, prior to knowing more information about how coronavirus was spreading. We really, you know, I think the city was acting in the interest of the public and trying to preserve the health and safety, as I touched on earlier, of the general public.
Okay. Well, the University of Idaho seems to be our biggest industry right now. And I guess this also goes back to local preemption. How should we respond to attacks on education, both from the Idaho administration or the Idaho legislature and the Trump administration? Yeah. We've got Senator Ben Taze's censorship law for higher education, and I believe there's some censorship going on through the legislature on K-12 as well, as at least as far as like banners and symbols and stuff. But the higher education one is really concerning because it involves what teachers, professors can even talk about. And you know, and once again, this is our biggest industry in the community, so big effect on Moscow.
Yeah. I mean, the University of Idaho is certainly, you know, an economic driver. It's an essential part of what makes Moscow a really cool place to live, right? It's more diverse than a lot of Idaho is. It's more highly educated than many other areas of Idaho are. So, you know, to me, supporting the University of Idaho and having that continuous relationship is essential to quality of life here. I'm a UI alum myself, go Vandals, and understand the benefit that's at play there. You know, the challenging trade-off is because when we look at City of Moscow's limits, a lot of City of Moscow property is state-owned property, right? It's the University of Idaho property, and you know, the City of Moscow doesn't really collect property tax revenue from that, unfortunately. So, you know, there's this trade-off that obviously is for the greater good, and you know, on the balance, is hugely positive, but you know, there is sort of a trade-off in terms of you know, the balance sheet for the City of Moscow. You know, to touch on the state's view on education and education funding,